Today's daf in Masechet Shabbat, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf pei. We're holding the last couple of words, which introduces the Mishnah on Amud Beis, Ayin Tet Amud Beis, and that is that dyo, the amount of dried ink that you take out, is sufficient to mix to be able to write two letters. Tana, these two letters are either shtei otiyot b'dyo. Whether you're talking about ink, dyo usually doesn't mean what we call ink. It means the little pebble that you put into water that makes the ink. So dyo or bekulmos, or it's the same amount of ink, shtei otiyot bekalmarin. So whether you're talking about the actual ink or whether you're talking about the ink that's inside of the pen, the kulmos itself, or whether you're talking about an inkwell that you're carrying around that has that amount of ink in it, it's still a shear of shtei otiyot. There's a big machlokas we've shown him of how it is that we're meant to understand this. Does that mean that we don't have to take into consideration the ink that will remain stuck in the inkwell or that will remain stuck on the pen, and it's exactly the same as the ink, or it's saying exactly the opposite, that it still requires the ability to write the shtei otiyot? That's the machlokas we've shown him. Oy Rava. Now, how about if you take out one letter worth of ink, one letter's worth in the pen, in the quill, and one letter's worth in the inkwell, meaning not all three, two out of the three, any two out of these three, what would be the din? So in other words, is the modality of the hotza of the ink, the way in which you're going to be using the ink, even though it's the same shear, would they be mitztaref, or would we view that as two different types of hotza'ah? So what would be the halacha? Teku. That's not clear because, again, the issue of hotzah, we're still in hotzah, remember, just like we started. So the issue of hotzah has very much a relationship deeply to the question of the maleches machsheves element of the hotzah, which has everything to do with the way in which you're looking at the utilization. So it's not clear whether we would be able to take the malacha down to some type of fundamental idea, which is what it is that this is potentially capable of, or whether we're supposed to stop. And we've seen this before. It's not clear how profoundly we take something all the way down to the base of a malacha, particularly where we know that we need to be able to fill up our lamites malachas, and that gives us a guideline as to where it is that we stop with our definition. So this remains standing. Amar Rava, now I got another chiddush for you when it comes to the hotza of ink. And it's a unique kind of thing. Ink gives us all types of very interesting ways of looking at the question of hotza. Because remember that hotza consists of an akira and a hanocha besides the actual transference from one rishus to another. When it comes to ink, the presence of the ink is always relative to the paper. That's the point. And it's not relative to the rishus. You couldn't care less whether your book is in the rishus or abim or the book. The idea over here is the ink on the book. The ink on the book is on the page of the book. That's the issue. So therefore, says Rava, if you wrote two letters of ink while you are walking, which means that there was never hanocha. Now, normally, if you would carry something out and you would simply continue walking and then go in back at the same rishus, you would never be chayev, right? Because you never did an act of hanocha. But when it comes to ink on a page, that is the hanocha. You would be chayev because ktivatan zohi hanachatan. That is the way to define the hanocha of the ink. Furthermore, says Rava, suppose you took out one letter's worth of ink, and you write it. So now you go back in, and you take out another letter's worth of ink, and you write it. You'd be putter, even though it was Be'alei Mechad, which is weird. Why would that be? If it's Be'alei Mechad, so then all of the Chatz Shiurim are Mitztarfim, why wouldn't this be Mitztarif? My timer, I'll tell you why, I got a Chat. Because what happens is that when you wrote down the first letter on the page and went back inside to get the second letter, meanwhile, what was happening? The ink was drying. But when the ink was drying, it was dehydrating. And therefore, by the time you bring out the second letter, you no longer have a shear in the first letter. Because it's not the letter that you wrote that we're talking about, the chiyavan over here. It's the amount of ink that can write that letter that we're talking about, and you no longer have that ink. That's like crazy, right? So if you had exactly the shear of Ot Echad, put it on the page, went back in and brought out another Ot Echad, you don't have two Otiot. So what he's bringing out here is that the Ot is the shear, but it's not the effect of the Otzah. We're still looking at the ink content, not at the letter content. It's amazing. Okay, so that's one of my chidushim, is that be'idna da'afka le'batraita, by the time you take out the second letter, you are choser le'le shiur de'kamaita. Now you're missing the amount that you needed in the first year. You don't have now enough to write two letters worth of ink. Another chidush of Rava is that if you took out, Omar Rava, you took out, let's say, food, okay? A half a groger. Now, the normal shear of, let's say, a bowl of cereal would be one groger. So you take out a chatzi groger, you put it down. You then come out, and you take out another groger, and you put it down. Then you wouldn't be chayev, because the first one is looked at as if a dog ate it up, or it was burned, and then you'd be potter. What? That's crazy. A dog didn't eat it. It's still right here. We have the two shiurim put together equals one grogeret, and that's precisely what would be mitzvah. No, obviously, I mean, you have to put in the words to understand what's happening over here. What Rav is saying is like this. Suppose you took something out. Chatzi grogeret. You go and you pick up the first one, and then you walk in and you bring out a second one. You can't be mitzarev the two acts of hotzah. You can only be mitzarev the two results of the hotzah. So in other words, if you don't have the full grogeret at any point, then you never did a single hotzah of a grogeret. And because of that, it would be the same thing as, let's say, you threw something out. Before it was munach, a dog grabs it and eats it, right? Or it gets burnt up. So in those cases, you're potter. Same thing would be true over here. The Omar Rava, Otsi Chatzi Grogeret V'Nicha. Now let me tell you something else. You put down your first Chatzi Grogeret, you come back into the house, take out another Chatzi Grogeret, and you don't put it down on top of the first Chatzi Grogeret. Instead, what you do is you sort of whistle and pretend you're not carrying anything, you know. And you pass right over, with your hand hanging down, right over that first Chatzi Grogeret. And it's within three tvachim of that half a Grogeret. Gotcha! At that point, you would be chayev. So the whistling didn't do you any good. Why? Because since it's within shalish of the first one, they're now all considered to be together. Now, it doesn't really need to be together, obviously. We'll see later as Tosis points out. What do you mean together? As long as it's in the same Rishus, that would be okay. The point over here that Rav is making the Chiddush is, I never had it within three tefachim of the ground. It's true. If I would have had it within three tefachim of the ground, then even though I'm walking, it would be considered to be munach agabe karka. But over here, it never was within three tefachim of the ground. It was only within three tefachim of the first bowl of cereal. And therefore, it would be mitzarev because the two of them are within three tefachim. It's considered to be munach on the first of the otza'ah. So why would that be considered to be munach? Where did you do the hanach on the second piece? Amai, holonach. It means kegon shavirat toch shlosha. Since it's within three tefachim, remember the shear of within three tefachim is considered to be lavud, and if it's lavud, then it's all considered to be connected. We seem to be missing some very serious bibi present this morning, and I would urge a tikkun. I've been drinking, you don't bother looking, and we urge a tikkun, a rapid tikkun of that problem. We seem to have the same problem in the Rogoff situation over there. Some of the Rogoffs are missing. Not good, not good. Okay, we also have a problem with our Joburg situation here. too many people are missing, and somebody's got to start making some telephone calls. So if there's anybody who's able to Vima Orr, please do. I don't know whose telephone that is, but maybe he'll do the calling.
Rebbe, please think about drinking 8 times an oven and not twice an oven.
We'll see later on that this machlokas what the shear is of how many gulps you have to have per omud. So I'm going to paskin like Rebbe Tarfon. Akiva, maybe you've got like a little telephone that you can be dialing meanwhile, or have some of the missing BBs start calling around. Calvin is missing today. Naftali's missing today. Laz missing today. What's going on? Okay, now, the problem is, asks the Gemara, that the one person who denies that passing within 3 tefachim while you're still moving should be considered an actual hanocha is Rava. So of all people to say that even though you weren't meniach it, it would be still considered to be otsah because it was within 3 tefachim, it should certainly not be Rava. To ask the Gemara, remember we had before, Amar Rava, that if you have something that's within 3 tefachim, that nonetheless, remember the machlokas over there between Rabbi Akiva and the Rabbanan about whether something is going through a Rishus HaYochi between 2 different Rishus HaRabims, what would be the halacha? So we had before, if I go from, I remember the case was I'm throwing a ball across Rishus HaYochi and I go from one Rishus HaRabim to the other Rishus HaRabim. So Rabbi Akiva was the one who, and I'm sure you wrote this down in your list of Munachim, who holds Kluta K'mishu Huncha. Now, once something is within the airspace of a Rishus, it's considered to be technically, halachically, at rest over there. But the Rabbanan disagree. So Rava was the one who said that according to the Rabbanan, even if it passes across that middle Rishus within 3 tefachim of the ground, the 3 tefachim of the ground are significant, but they don't take the place of a hanocha. In what sense are they significant? That normally, remember, you need to have hanocha agabe mokom arba al arba, correct? But in this case, because it's considered to be lova to the ground, you don't need arba al arba because it's on the surface of the earth. But in terms of the question of whether it needs to be at rest, it has to at least be at rest for a second, Rava says, tzarich hanocha agabe mashahu. So how come over here, Rava says, if you just whistle your way across, that would be all right? Says Igmar, it's not a problem. The case over there was talking about where you threw a ball between one Rishus HaRabim and the other Rishus HaRabim across Rishus HaYochid. Over there, indeed, Rava holds that the Rabbanan hold, it has to stop in order for it to be Munach. But over here, we're talking about where you are carrying it. And when you are carrying it, we don't consider it to be in a no place because it's currently constantly moving. Your hand is basically being dragged along by you. And therefore, if it's within Shalash, even the Rabbanah would be made that it's Munach. Tana Rabbanah. Suppose you took out a Chatzi Grogeret. You went back in, you took out another Chatzi Grogeret, and you did all of this within one hell. I mean, you didn't realize in between that there was an Isser that was involved, or that it was Shabbos, whatever the case would be. So you would be Chayiv. But if there was anything that reminded you in between that you just did something that's Osir, so then it's Shtei Halamot. The Shtei Halamot, it would be Potter. Because again, the Yediya, according to this, even if a chatzi shiur would be considered to be mechalkin for chataot. We had this question before. It's listed among your munachim. Rabbi Yossi says, if it's behelam echad, you're right. But, and please write this down, Rabbi Yossi holds rishuyot are mechalkot. So for legabe chatas, a different name of the Rishus, even though it's the same type of the Rishus, but in your mind, it's a different Rishus because it looks different. It's separated from another Rishus that is similar to it. So you'd have a Rishus HaRabim, And it was separated by a gate from another Rosh Hashanah, I mean, by different Rosh Hashanah in between it. So then, since in your mind, that's not the same place, we had this same idea of the guy who had stuck his hand out, whether we allow him to put it down in the same place where he wanted to, into Chatzar Acher. All of that is important to take into consideration in terms of Otsa. So Aliba to Rabbi Yossi holds, Rishuyot are Michalkot, meaning that if you did, if there was, just like there's the idea, you can't be mitzarif two acts, so too, if it's a different reshus, you cannot be mitzarif two acts, and if each one was a shiur shalem, so then it would be mechayev you separately a chatas. In the same way, it cannot be mitzuraf if you did half of the shiur in one and half in the other. So if it's behelam achat reshut achat, yes, but if it's the shtei reshuyot potter, what defines shtei reshuyot? So Rabbi says shtei reshuyot means that these two reshuyot are literally separated by the type of reshut that would have caused you to be chayev achiyev chatas if you had gone and stopped in the middle in that reshut. That's enough to clearly delineate the rishus on either side as a totally different rishus arabi. You'd be able to walk out of your house onto Fifth Avenue on one side and onto Fourth Avenue on the other side. So then the house vis-a-vis Fifth Avenue or Fourth Avenue is a rishus hayachid, and each one would be a separate chiyav chatas. If I walked from one to the other, I would be chayav. That's where he's saying that rishus are machalkos. But if you only have a karmelit between the two, which is the Rishus Rabbanan, that's not sufficient to separate a Rishus Rabbanan into two parts. Abaye says, even a Karmelit, because again, what we're talking about over here is the nature of your relationship to Rishus, which is the Melechus Machshevas. So even a Karmelit is sufficient, but a Pisla is not sufficient. So a Pisla would be just a board of wood, and that is not enough to make it a separate rishus, even though the entire rishus has got a long board across it. That is not enough to be mechalikin, even though that pisla would be a mokum tur. The Azda Rava, and Rava says, even a pisla is enough. Why? Because, let me give you an example. Suppose a husband who's attempting to divorce his wife and needs to legally transfer the get into her rishus. She doesn't have a rishus that he could transfer it to, and he doesn't want to see her. So what he does is he gives her the rights to utilize his chotzer. So then he's makna her the chotzer. He throws her the get into his chotzer, which is now her chotzer. So she's kena the get when it lands in the chotzer. But suppose when he throws it into the chotzer, it ends up rolling onto a board like this. So the Gemara says over there, he only gave her one makom in his chotzer, didn't give her two makomas in his chotzer. And since this pisla is seen as a separate makom, she wasn't kena the get. So therefore, says Rava, the same thing would be true over here. It's considered to be a separate rishus. And this is Rava's Shita there, that rishut Shabbat ki rishut gitin damya, it would have the same aloha as whatever the din would be, legabe, the chalot of a get. Okay, let's move on. The next case we had in the Mishnah was eyeshadow, or it's not really accurate to call it eyeshadow because it's a eye paint kind of thing. Sometimes it was used for refuah. It was the way in which you got things into the eye. So it says over here, kachol, normally kachol is like the coloration. So it would be very similar to eyeshadow, eye paint. And crazily, the Mishnah says enough for one eye. Now, who in the world would only do one eye? I mean, she would look pretty weird with him unless dressing for Halloween. So ayin achat, halo kachli. Nobody does that. Why is that considered to be sufficient? Omar Ravuna, well, I mean, we're talking about the kind of woman who doesn't want exposure. So she basically puts, you know, this mask on over her eyes. I think that's the way they wear the masks in South Africa, as the president very clearly indicated. So you put the mask over your eyes. So since you do have to see, It took him a little while to figure that out, but since you do have to see. So what the woman who is Tsanua will do is she'll let one eye out. Well, she may be Tsanua, but it's got to be a pretty eye, right? So she's going to put the kuchol into that one eye, whereas the other eye remains covered with her eye mask or shador or whatever it is that she's wearing, right? So because of that, it really is possible that the woman will only paint one eye. Meisvei, Reb Shimon ben Elazar omer, kuchol, if you're taking out this kuchol, it depends what the purpose is. If it's being taken out for refuah, then it's enough for ayin achat, because you put in medication whatever eye is painting you. But if it's being used for eye decoration of any kind, then it has to be shtei einayim. So then that is the opposite. Here the Braita is saying the opposite of Ravuna. Ravuna was talking about even the kishut. Tirgama Hillel Bereda Reb Shmuel Bar Nachmeni, that Kitanya, that Braita is talking about women who live in small towns, Be'iraniyot. Women who live in small towns are not exposed to the same kind of abuse and the same kind of dangers from exposure to men and so on. And because of that, they're not as makbid as they are in the big cities where you can get a pinch just walking down the street. Sha'ava kideli tein al pi nekev katan. What is a nekev katan? Tana kideli tein al pi nekev katan shel yayin. Remember that wine is going to flow a lot easier than honey or than oil. And because of that, we have to define what's the hole that is normally used that you would need to temporarily close up with your wax. Devek, and then said enough glue to put on the top of a shafshaf, which is like a little piece of wood. What is that? Tana, kedeli tein berosh shafshaf sheberosh kanesh tzayadin. What a shafshaf is a replacement trap piece that you put on the top of your long stick. If you're a bird trapper, what you do is you have these replaceable boards, little pieces of wood that stick into your kana. And you put a bunch of glue on them, and then you put a piece of something attractive to a bird on the glue. And you just sit there and wait for a bird to alight on it, and then the bird can't fly off because it gets glued onto the top. Then you remove that piece. You've got a bird on the bush. Fine. That is the shear. Zefit v'gofrit for a hole. What kind of hole are we talking about over here? Pitch, tar, sulfur. Here we're talking about the neck of katan, as I mentioned to you earlier, to hold mercury. And mercury is very, very tiny nekev. Charsit. Charsit is like crushed brick or crushed cheres. Kedei lasot pikur. And that was referring to the surface ahav. That would be enough to make an opening for somebody who's using a gold refining furnace, and he's got to get air, oxygen pumped into that furnace. So he wants to close it up. Or Rabbi Yehuda says over there, it would be enough to make for the support, which is the tripod, as Rashi says over there, on which you put the mapoach, the blower, for the furnace. Now, that certainly sounds like it's a lot more than what you would need to close up the hole. But the problem is that that would mean that the shiurim of Rabbi Yehuda, who's set for the tripod, is bigger, and that means that Rabbi Yehuda is meikil. But we have a Kabbalah, as we've seen in many cases with the shiurim of Shabbos, that actually the Rabbanan are the one who are meikil, and therefore require a larger amount, and it's Rabbi Yehuda, who is always machmir l'gabi hotzah, and he only needs a lesser amount. So how does this tie into the normal machlokas between Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanan? I mean, take a look at the case that we had before. We just had the Mishnah about rope or reeds. What's the difference between them? So Rabbi Yehuda says that the amount over there would be sufficient to take just enough for a min'al l'katan, to take a measurement of a child's foot, which was smaller. Okay, what it means over here is not that you make the tripod. It means kidei lasut pit put kira ktana. It means to glue, basically, with a little bit, or to fill up a hole in the tripod of your small gold refiner's furnace. Okay, next thing we had was subin, and that was sufficient to put on the pikur of tzorfei zahav. This is seems to be a mistake because the Gemara has nothing to do with this. It's one of those printer kind of things. And in fact, the next sugya is a completely different issue. Tana Rabbana. Hamotzi se'ar. Somebody is carrying out hair. Now, what hair is good for is mixing with cement because it actually provides a binder for the cement. And therefore, I think we've got your phone, whoever you are. I'll try muting you. Yeah, we got you. Okay. And therefore, the amount is kidei legabel et atit, enough to knead clay. What kind of clay are we talking about? Some have the girsa here, not separately. Tit, lasot pikur shel tzarfei zahav, which we already had. But fine, it would be all one thing, maybe. And that's the girsa of some of the other Rishonim here. So what would that be? How much clay would that be? The amount that we spoke about in having that opening. Seed, kidei lasud, katan, ktana, shebebanot. Then we said enough seed, which is lime, that is good as a depilatory, that you can use on the littlest of a girl. What is that talking about? Tana kidei lasud, etzpa, ktana, shebebanot, to use enough to get the smallest finger of a girl, and the use when we used it over there, the idea was as a skin treatment, not for hair, not a depilatory because it wouldn't be on an etzpa katana, but just to get the skin looking red and fresh to make her look attractive. Now it was also used as a depilatory. So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav. So a Jewish girl who would reach puberty but was still young, so she was embarrassed from her friends that none of them had already had pubic hairs, so they wanted to remove those signs of puberty. So Benot Aniim, who didn't have a lot of money, so the only depilatory that they could use was sort of a harsh depilatory, which was lime. So Toflot Otan Besid. Benot Ashirim, people who had more money, they would use solet, fine flour, also ultimately can be used to pull off hair. And Benot Melachim, if they really had, they were really royalty, so then they would treat these kids with royal gloves. And Toflot Atam B'Shemen Hamor. Shemen Hamor, like we find by Achashverosh, is a Shishako Dashim B'Shemen Hamor. So what exactly is Shemen Hamor? So Rav Huna Bar Chiya says it is shemen hamor, meaning it's statkas, which is oil that has different spices, including myrrh, that's in it. Whereas Rav Yirmiyah Bar Ava says the shemen hamor is the olive oil, but it's harsh olive oil that is not yet from olives that are one-third ripe. They're not good for eating, but they are good for getting rid of extra hair. Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Omer, an piknon is shemen zayit shelo hevia shlish. The word for that kind of oil is called an piknon. And the idea over there is, what do you do with this material? Me shirat ha-se'ar u-me'adena basar. So the shemen hamor, either of the shemen hamors, is good for hair removal, and it causes the skin to become soft, radiant, and therefore it was used. Rav Bivi, he had a daughter, and he couldn't afford more than that, but he wanted her to become very beautiful. He didn't have any shemen hamor, but he had lime. Now, lime is not very good to put over a large area of skin. It can cause damage, be absorbed by the bloodstream, and cause some serious reactions. But he knew that, and so he would use only a little bit at a time. And he was tafla ever, but a little bit at a time, and gradually turned her into this radiant child. And because of that, Shakabar Bami Edzuze, he had the best guys in town trying to get hold of her, and they were ready to give quite a dowry there. So there was a goy that lived in that same neighborhood with Rav Bivi, and he also had this daughter that he figured, well, if the Jew boy can do it, I can do it. So he did the same thing, except he didn't have time to wait. So he just took a bunch of lime and poured it all over her and sat and waited until she died while her skin would get radiant. And sure enough, she died. Umeita. And he blamed, of course, Rav Bibi for killing his daughter, Katal Rav Bibi Levarte. It's his fault. And Rav Nachman said, who ever heard of a good Jewish boy having a daughter that is so dark and hairy that she needs lime treatment? I'll tell you, it's because of all that beer, that Rav Bibi always drinks beer. And that's his problem. If you drink a lot of beer in your house, you're going to end up with daughters that need lime treatments. Avoid that beer if you can. So Rav Bibi was a beer drinker. Bayan Benate Tifla, his kids all need to get this lime treatment. We don't drink beer in our house, let me tell you. My kids look very radiant without any kind of treatments. So I would advise you to avoid that beer. And then Rabbi Yehuda, he was the one who said that the shear is actually kidei lasut kilkul, enough to put over the kilkul as a depilatory or to hold it down. Now, what exactly afterwards? Rabbi Nechemya says, no, not a kilkul, an andipi. What are those things? My kilkul and my andipi. So, Amar Rav, it's the tzida and the bat tzida. So, it means to keep the hair down on the temple and on the area beneath the temple, where you take off, a depilatory removes like sort of tiny facial hairs that are coming down along the side of the ears. So again, this is a problem because then Rabbi Yehuda's shear is bigger than Rabbi Nechemya's shear. But I thought that Rabbi Yehuda was the one who was always machmir. Isn't that true of Rabbi Nechemya too? No. Rabbi Yehuda's shear is definitely smaller than the Rabbanan, and therefore he's being machmir. The Rabbanan said it has to be big enough to cover a whole limb. He said it's big enough to cover a limb, so that's more chomer. But Rabbi Nechemya is even more machmir. So he says it is bigger. It's bigger than Rabbi Nechemya's shear, and that means that it's nafish but Rabbi Nechemya, because Rabbi Nechemya is even more machmir than Rabbi Yehuda. Meitvei. Omar Rebbe, near in Divrei Rebbe Yehuda Bechavut, V'Divrei Rebbe Nechemya B'Vitzat Hasid. So if you have lime that you put into water and you banged it and now you've got basically a solution, and that solution looks very much like a modern depilatory that you would squeeze out of a squeeze bottle. Okay, that makes sense because that's what you need in order to take off hair. Whereas Rebbe Nechemya, I think, seems to be correct if you're talking about a lump. A lump is more like a very little moisture in it, and you could squeeze it, but you wouldn't use a lump if we were talking about your explanation of kilkul and andipi, because if that's what a tzida and bat tzida, they need exactly the same type of a liquidy depilatory. A lump is completely useless, and that means that you're wrong. I don't know if both of them are wrong, but one of these is vadai wrong, because Rebbe would not have said that it makes sense to use a lump of stuff. Elam Rav Yitzchak, Ami Deve Reb, Ami, it's not andipi, it's andipa. Andipa is a dupi. A dupi is a double spigoted barrel where you have the top you open up to be able to pour wine in, seal it, and then when you need to take the wine out, you open up the bottom. So here it's talking about what you would use to seal the bottom, and of course you would take a lump of lime, squish it in, and that would seal it. Matkeflorov kind of, oh please. What people look at good money as being junk. I understand. You're going to seal a barrel of wine with lime? How long do you think the lime is going to hold with the wine on top of it? So now you're ready to have the wine leak out of your barrel because your money isn't worth anything to you. Please. El Amar of Kana, I'll tell you what. Andipiar shnatot. Those are the marks that you make, which are very, anybody who's tried to see, fill till here in their Shabbos thing, right? You can never, where's the line? Where the heck is that line? You're going nuts to find the line. Those are called shnatot. So what you do when you really want to be able to see the line, or if you've got one of those measuring cups, it's always got to hold it up to the light and look and try to figure out Where is it, the half a cup mark? So if you use a little bit of lime, then you can actually see it, right? So then that's what you would use it for. Like it says in the Mishnah, Shnatot Hayu Behin, remember the hin in the Beis HaMikdash. So over there, it had different levels in which you'd be able to know how far you fill it up with the oil or the wine. So it's ad kam lepar, ad kam le'ayil, ad kam le'keves, because each one of those, of course, is chatzi ahin, or shlishi tahin, or revi'i tahin. So you would make those with a little bit of lime. V'bayit ema, what is andipe? Andipe is indeed a area on the face, but it's not under the temple, it's the forehead. And on the forehead, there's not hair. The reason that you're putting it on the forehead is to make the skin look really red and shiny. And therefore, Rebbe said, on that level, you would want to use more like a lump of sid rather than liquid sid. There was this guy from the Galil who comes to Bavel. And these guys in the Galil, you know, they're always like these Kabbalists kind of guys, right? So they're always taking money for the Kabbalists kind of stuff. Okay, so they get one of these Arizal type of so-called Arizal Talmidim that really maybe don't know anything. Or maybe they do, but they're popularizers of Kabbalah, right? So, okay, so they get one of these guys over there in Bavel. So everybody says, oh, wow, come and give us a big drasha on Kabbalah. We'd love a drasha on Maisa Merkava. Oh, yes, he says, Edrosh Lechu, I am going to give you a drasha, man, like you never heard. The way Rabbi Nechemia used to give his drushas to his chaver, no problem. I'm sure you're all very, very sophisticated people and will not misunderstand anything I say. So he gets up and he's moving the mic in order to be able to make sure everybody can hear him. And just as he's ready to start, out comes this yellow jacket from the wall and gives him a sting right smack in the middle of his andipi. So you see for here, the andipi indeed means his forehead. Pow! So he got a bullet right to the forehead at that moment, and the guy drops dead. And they said, well, he brought it on himself. Min delay dalay. This came from his chutzpah of going around with his Kabbalah. And now Sir Richard will give us an introduction to the next exciting Mishnah. That was lovely. I like that effect of the growl, the growing growl before. That's like a whole new twist. That definitely gets you the sense of the lion in the Torah. So the next case we have is if you're taking out adama. So you just, adama means a type of clay. It doesn't mean just plain dirt. So the shear of that is for being able to make a seal with the clay. At what size seal? Kichotem amart sofim. Divrei Rabbi Akiva. So that's the big sacks that they used in boats for shipping, and that used quite a large kind of seal. It's interesting, by the way, that these martzofim were the equivalent, really curious, they were the equivalent of Indian canoes because they were made out of bark, and they would seal them on top. It's very interesting. So there had been a use of this stuff, you know, for the same purpose in the sense that it was waterproofing. So they would use these things to waterproof the containers on ships, and then they would seal them. And to be able to make sure that they weren't opened illegally, they sealed it to make sure they closed it with a stamper. And that took quite a bit of clay. Where the Chachomim Omrim, it doesn't have to be such a big stamp, just enough that goes on a letter. So, Kechotama Igorot. How about if you take out Zevel, fertilizer, or sand, thin sand, that also serves to go around the growing stalks of things they use, as we saw earlier, the Zabel Kelach Shel Kruv, enough even for one cabbage, Divrei Rabbi Akiva, and the Chachomim say even enough for a kresha, which is a leek nowhere near as thick as a cabbage. If you have coarse sand, So then Chol Hagas, that would be enough to put on Melo Kaf Sid. Rashi says, what is that? A trowel, as he writes it out, a trowel. So this would be a trowel of somebody who's using lime. Now, it turns out that it doesn't mean to fill up the trowel, but as we'll see in the Gemara, that they would mix a lime, which would usually be white, just whitewash, and they would mix it with sand to create a stucco-like effect, and that would not be as white, but it would be a very strong wall covering. This was so popular here. This was like the most expensive wall covering you could get in Yerushalayim like 50-some years ago. So they would always try to sell you what they called at that time. They called it kuchla, even though now that word has a different meaning. You know, sure, you don't want it kuchla. So this would be sprayed, actually. They would put the sand into this device, and they would like roll it, and it would go all over. And this was like the fanciest wall that you could get. So anyway, that is actually what's talking about over here, where you mix the sand with the lime. How about one reed? A kona, that's good to make a kumos, which you used to write with. Vim haya ava, suppose it was too thick to be a good pen, or if it was cracked, it was merusas, there were cracks through it, then it's fuel. How much fuel? Kedei levashelbo, beitzak kalash bebeitzim, enough to cook the easiest of eggs to cook, which we'll talk about in the Gemara. And this would be when it's already been beaten. And we'll see that it all was beaten with oil. And it's now in the frying pan, ready to go. Now, when you say, says the Gemara, you put enough to put on a trowel of sid. What does that mean? Tana, kedei litena pi kafshel sayadin. It's the amount that you would put in a trowel of plaster of a guy who is doing sid, so he's painting. Man tana dechol male lesid. So who says that sand is a good thing to mix with lime to do your walls? Om Rav Chista, this is Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanya, lo yasud adam et beito besid, elim ken irvo beteven o bechol. So after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, one of the takonas that they made was not to finish the walls with whitewash, unless, of course, you leave the area of Amma al-Amma, which is how we pask it, although it's a big machlokas rishonim, you should know, that actually, most told, you can't paint at all. And the Amma al-Amma is not even finished with plastering. But the mice of the minig has become to be makel, as Rama points out, and we even paint a house, make everything nice, except for that Amma al-Amma. So anyway, the Chachonim say, what you could do is, you could mix straw or thick sand together with the lime, and then you get a crummy finish. So that's good for post-churban. Masha Inkein, Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you can mix it with straw, that's crummy, but if you mix it with sand, you're making it better. Because that is the famous Troxid. Troxid is like super strong Sid. That's the trade name, Troxid. But anyway, the generic name is the lime with the chol. So clearly it's Rabbi Yehuda who holds that the sand is good for the lime. No, this is Rava, not necessarily. It could be the Rabbanan agree that, of course, it makes it better in terms of the strength. But what they're saying is that kilkulo zeo tikuno. In other words, the very fact that it makes it look uglier, because it's not as bright and white, that's the reason that you can use it. So because of that, Megabe Shabbos, it would be a tikun. Because now I'm going to be able to use this kind of lime to paint my house post-churban. So because of that, even according to the Rabbanan, it is useful. Kone kedei lasot kumos. How big does the pen have to be that you could be making out of your reed? It has to get at least up to the joints on your fingers if you're going to be writing with it. Not like your kids when they come to school and all that's left is the nib and they're trying to get it between their thumb and so on and the teacher's furious and so on. Not that. So boy, Rav Ashi, but when you say until the joints, which joints? Are we talking about they have to get up to your knuckle or is it enough if they just get up to the joint of the finger itself? Teiku. Imayave, what if it was useless for a pen, too thick, and so on? So he said the shear was an easy egg. But what is an easy egg? So first of all, the Braita explains that the egg is beaten. It says over here, trufa. But trufa doesn't mean it's just a well-beaten egg. It means it's mixed. It's been beaten with oil to make it easier to fry. And it's put into the frying pan, and now it's going to cook easily. Omele Marbereta Ravina Levrei. So Marbereta Ravina asks his son, when he comes back from the yeshiva, so tell me, did they teach you what is a beitza kala? Am I he? So he said, well, I heard that it was like a really small egg, which cooks quickly. So it's a beata de tziltzila. So the tziltzila is a very small kind of turtle dove, and that's what it's referring. So his father asks him, what's the logic? So his son said to him, because it's small. So if it's small, it requires less fuel. Mishum de Zutra. So his father said to him, well, I mean, if that's the criterion, then you haven't found the smallest possible bird. I mean, take a hummingbird. I mean, I don't know. Why a dove? So that can't be the reason. Ishtik. That shut the kid up. So finally, instead of being a know-it-all, he asks, Daddy, do you know? So maybe you want to tell me? Well, now that you ask, yes, actually. It is referring to a chicken egg. And you know why it's called a beitza kala? Not because it has less material, but because it happens to respond very quickly to heat, more quickly than other eggs. And therefore, shi'aru chachamim, ein lecha beitza kala levashel yoter mi beitza tarnegolet, that is a very easy egg to cook. So the son asks him, but Abba, I thought all of the other shiurim of Shabbos, a grogeret is enough. And over here, you're telling me a chicken egg is big, much bigger than a grogeret. So why over here is the shiur an egg? Ay, silly boy. It doesn't mean the size of the egg. It means the amount of a grogeret of an egg that is easily able to be cooked. That's the point. So Achiyam Reb Nachman, the reference over here is to the shear, the normal shear of Otzah, which is the grogeret, but of what? Of an egg that's easily cooked. So if you've got that amount of a grogeret ready to be cooked, then that is considered to be your shear. Huh. Interesting. Now, I would suggest that we...